You've had, if I can count them up, how many careers have you had?
Well, I've been obviously a journalist, I've been a photographer, I've been a military officer, I've been a teacher, and I've been a school administrator, a superintendent, and a college professor, and a dean of college of education, and just can't hold a job.
Are you afraid to say which one you enjoyed the most?
To be honest, I've enjoyed every one of them. I do enjoy writing. I think Printer's Ink is in my blood, even though, in my opinion, the Lord wanted me to be an educator, and I have been. I have always wanted to be a journalist, personally, and I've enjoyed being a journalist.
And that's something you can continue with. We didn't mention the book, Tony Duffelbag and Other Remembrances of the War in Korea. We have a bookstore associated with our website. Just a quick story, Tony Duffelbag.
That's an interesting story because we're doing a follow-up book on that because for the past almost 60 years, I've been trying to find what happened to Tony. Tony was the name we gave to an orphan Korean boy that two of my friends found on the streets of Seoul in February of 1952. The temperature was somewhere in the range of probably 10 or 11 degrees. It had warmed up from the 20 below weather that we had been experiencing. Those two soldiers, friends of mine, I had recommended for a medal for heroism, and as part of all that, we had given them 3 days' leave to go back to the capital city of Seoul, which wasn't much of a reward because Seoul was pretty well devastated. It had changed hands 3 times in 18 months, and it was a city that, before the war, had probably been a 3 million population. It was probably down to 500,000 or 600,000, and buildings were devastated, and not much they could do. In fact, there weren't any hotel rooms they could stay in. They were placed in the German embassy, which didn't have a lot of damage, and they had a room there. But they were out on the street the second night there, and they found this little Korean boy who was about 6 or 7 years old. He was starving and freezing and had freeze burns all over him, and he didn't have any shoes. The only clothing he was wearing was a tank top that was on the upper part of his body and one wrapped around the lower part of his body. He was in bad shape. He would probably have died that night or the next day. They said, we can't leave this boy here. They didn't know what they were going to do with him. They knew they couldn't leave him on the street. None of us spoke very much Korean. The boy didn't speak any English. So they found someone who could interpret a little bit and found that the boy's family had been killed by the Chinese, and he was totally alone there. They took him in, got him cleaned up a little bit, and the next day they were to come back to our unit. And they said, we're going to try to sneak him back up to our unit. At that time, our unit had moved back off the front lines. We'd been in the front 30-something days. We would move back into a blocking position about 4 or 5 miles from the front. We're doing some retraining, but we were in a reserve position to go back up if necessary. So it was a kind of a safe location. They said, we're going to sneak him back up there until we can figure out what to do. They tried to figure out how they were going to get him by the military checkpoints, because no civilian could go up toward the combat area. They stuck him down inside a canvas duffel bag that had all their belongings in. When they got to the checkpoint, the military police checked bags, but they were checking about every third bag. They had this little boy stuck down in a duffel bag, and the military police skipped that bag as they were going through. So when they came back up to our unit, they opened up their duffel bag, and out popped this little smiling boy. He was warm and safe and fed right at that particular moment. His name in Korean sounded to us a lot like Tony, so they started calling him Tony, and I said, well, he needs a last name. He came to us in a duffel bag, so let's name him Tony Duffel Bag. We were able to keep him safe in our unit for a few weeks. We wrote home and told our families about him, and I wrote my wife. At that time, we had a young son that was only about 6 months old at the time, but she went to the town and bought a Levi jean jacket, and that's the jacket he's wearing in that photograph. She bought a jean jacket and mailed it to us to give to him, and we sewed patches and stripes and things on it. Another wife sent him a Hopalong Cassidy cap pistol set, and he strapped on his 2 cap pistols. Everyone in the unit just adopted him, fell in love with him. After a while, the officials in our regimental headquarters heard that we had this Korean boy up with us, and they said, you can't do that.
And how old was he again?
He was about 6 or 7, our guest.
Right.
But anyway, he had been adopted unofficially by everybody in the unit. Even our company commander was part of the scheme of keeping him there until we figured out what to do. Eventually, the regimental commander issued a direct order to our commander and said, "You will turn him over." Every time they would come up to get him, well, he would just disappear, and no one knew where he was. He would hide somewhere. He knew that they were going to take him. Well, eventually, they did get him, and they placed him in an orphanage that had been established. The Air Force had established an orphanage at that time over by Incheon. He was placed there, and we returned to the States. I had always wondered what happened to Tony, and so for all the years since, I've tried in a variety of ways to find what happened to him, and we've never been able to do that. I had a friend who was Korean who was in our doctoral group at the University of Tulsa, who was superintendent of schools in Incheon and later in Seoul. He said, "You'll never find him." He said, "There's too many thousands of those orphan boys." We tried to get newspapers there in Incheon and Seoul to run the picture and say, "Were you Tony at this time?" Still are doing that. Copies of the book are in the Korean Military History Museum in Seoul. I had some friends who were on a mission trip, and they visited with the archivist at that museum, which is a huge museum of all the wars that Korea has been in 3,000 years. The Korean War that we talk about is just a small part of that museum. But they, at one time, were going to put a small exhibit in about Tony and about that, but I don't know if they ever did that. We've not been able to find him. Still, we had a response even this week from a gentleman who runs an agency trying to identify people like that, and he said it's almost hopeless.
He would be how old today?
He would be in his late 60s, maybe 70.
You don't know if he's alive or not?
No, we do not. He had such a great personality, very vivacious. If he survived, and I'm most confident that he was, because they moved those orphans on down to some more safe areas in southern Korea, I knew that he would rise to some level of leadership in that country. In my mind, I envisioned that he's a governmental leader or a great corporate leader or something. And I'd like to tell the rest of the story. I've about decided to just write the rest of the story as a fictitious story. In fact, I've got a draft started on that particular book.
You can't keep yourself from writing, can you?
The title of the new book is Finding Tony Duffelbeck.
Okay. And you would think that he would have some way of being the one to contact you.
In my fictitious story, he does. Of course, he was only 6 or 7 years old. You remember some things at that age, but you can't remember a lot of the details. He would remember he was Tony, though.
Right.